The other day I was doing premarital counseling with a couple, and although the bride had been a lifelong member of the parish and I knew her parents, I did not know them well enough to know how the two parents had met. So I asked the bride, "How did your parents meet?" And she said to me, "Oh, they were in college together. They were in a class together. And my mother said she was just drawn to my father." Drawn to my father. Have you ever been drawn to anyone? Have you ever felt the inexorable pull of someone upon you, trapped and pulled in like a tractor beam on Star Wars? Have you ever been drawn to anyone? The psalmist sings, "As a deer longs for water, as a deer longs for flowing streams, my heart longs for you, O God." The idea that the human soul was made to long for God, to desire union with our Maker, is a frequent theme of our faith. "You have made us for yourself, O God, and our hearts cannot find rest until they rest in you," wrote St. Augustine in his Confessions. Something in us humans desires something, someone who transcends all of this. We are frail, mortal, finite creatures who long to find shelter in, under, taken care of by the wings of the Almighty. We flit from flower to flower like honeybees, hoping to alight on one place where we will sip the nectar that preserves us from decay. We fall into step behind the flag, we meld into the group, we merge our identities into something bigger than ourselves. But the truth is that no group, no earthly project, no mundane happiness satisfies our deepest desire, satisfies our restless hearts. "We ought to pay attention to this natural desire," said the Greek philosopher Aristotle. Aristotle said that the fact that we experience hunger implies some end to that hunger. Hunger implies food. The fact that we don't like being alone, that we are lonely, implies that we are made for companionship. We're social creatures. We ought to pay attention to our desires because they imply some object, some end to those desires. In his autobiography, Surprised by Joy, C.S. Lewis testifies to his own, from as far back as he can remember, his own longing to God. "This desire isn't fulfilled through any earthly means. All purely, creaturely, earthly pleasure is fleeting. And so why should there be such a desire if there wasn't an object for that desire? Why would there be this sense of emptiness and need if there wasn't a fulfillment awaiting it?" Yet before he's done with his searching, Lewis realizes, in Surprised by Joy, that the object of his desire is pursuing him. The God that he was wanting all along is wanting him. His life became thus an illustration of the powerful draw of God's love on human beings. You find this in Augustine's Confessions. The book begins with, "I searched, I read, I wanted." And it ends with, "You came, you touched me, you spoke, you, you, you." The God Augustine was reaching for all the while was reaching for Augustine. Didn't Jesus promise us, "When I am lifted up, I will draw all unto myself"? I think when Christians use the term conversion or born again, this is often what we're pointing to, that surprising, joyful moment of that long, tortured process when we awake to find that the God we thought we were pursuing all the while is pursuing us. And of course, this is how the Bible tells it. Hardly anybody in the Bible is ever looking for Jesus. He's looking for them. He intrudes. The other day, somebody asked me, "Why does the Church of St. Michael and St. George only sing these old songs? I mean, I go to the gathering, I go to the journey. They all sing new songs. Why don't you?" And I said, "You know, listening to that music, there's just a lot of the first person singular. I, me, my. I heard a Christian song the other day that repeated the phrase, I want to be near you, I want to love you, I want to know you. And that music is so typical of our culture, a world in which everything is defined by what I want and I desire. The biblical story is about God's desire for us, about God's amazing desire for me. And so we come to today's gospel on the fifth Sunday in Lent. Some Greeks have come searching for Jesus, and of course that's unusual because throughout the Gospel of John, Jesus spends most of his time looking for people rather than people looking for him. And Jesus responds to their search with this oblique, enigmatic talk of a seed of grain falling to the earth, of dying, of losing a life in order to find it. He speaks of this time as a time when the Father will be glorified. When I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself, Jesus says. In a way, this is what Jesus has been attempting to do throughout his earthly ministry, to draw people to himself. And now, John says, he is troubled because he is about to go to die on the cross. And he speaks of that troubling hour as his glory. Where is the glory in that? I'll tell you. It is the glory of a God who is determined to have us. It is the story of a God whose glory is to stop at nothing so that he might have us, stop not even at death on a cross. And when I am lifted up, I will draw all unto myself. Remember a people of God, a family? This was God's idea, not ours. God came to a ragtag bunch of nomads, making a promise to be their God and to form them into God's people. That was the covenant, the promise God offered. Alas, the story of God's people is a story of all the ways we broke, abused, and turned against that promise. The prophet Jeremiah, in today's first lesson, foresees a day when there will be a new covenant written on the hearts of all people. Jesus says that day is coming as he is being lifted up. Now, lifted up might be taken to mean that this word made flesh, this God come among us, is a last ascending away from us, being lifted up from the grubby confines of earth to another more heavenly world. But there's a double meaning here in this lifted up. For here, in the context of the story that's working itself out among us, Jesus is being lifted up, all right. He's being lifted up on a cross. He's being lifted up, but not lifted away from us, rather lifted even closer to us, drawn nearer to us. He is moving into the heart of our violence, our cruelty, our enmity, and our hatred. And this is really his true hour of glory. When I am lifted up, I will draw all to myself. In an amazing act of condescension on Good Friday, God descends down. Down becomes one with us. The story of divine condescension begins on Christmas and ends on Good Friday. We thought if there was going to be business between us and God, we would have to somehow get up to God. But then God comes down to us. God comes down, 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 all the way down to the level of a cross, all the way down into the depths of hell. He who knew not sin took our sin so that we might be free from it. God stoops into your life and my life. God condescends. Are you able to drink the cup that I am to drink? He asks his disciples on his way to Golgotha. The answer is no. His cup is not only a cup of crucifixion and death, it is the bloody, bloody cup that one must drink if one is going to get mixed up with the likes of human beings. Any God who would wander into the human condition, any God who has this thirst to pursue us, had better not be put off by pain, because that's the way we treat our saviors. Any God who tries to love us had better be ready to die for us. Just for this Sunday, as we stand on the threshold of Calvary, take this as a working definition of the gospel, the heart of the Christian faith. God deeply desires us and will do anything to get to us, even die on a cross. And his cross, that instrument of cruelty, is a sign that by his sacrifice, it will turn into a magnet that is drawing all into its field. A large net that will catch all humanity within its cast. Jesus says, "When I am lifted up, I will draw all unto myself." I remember years ago, Daisy and I were at dinner with a friend who'd fallen away from the church as an adult. Church seemed impersonal, irrelevant, formal. And I responded, "Well, God's not going to lose track of you." "But how do you know?" he said. "How do you know? How could God do that?" And I said, "God will find a way. God will use something that speaks to you to let you know he loves you." The waitress brought the bill, our friend paid for dinner, and when the change came, it came with a $20 bill that someone had stamped on it, "Jesus died for you." I looked at the $20 bill sitting on the tray and I said, "As I said, God will use some way that speaks to you to let you know he loves you." Your life can best be described as one long story of God's unquenchable desire for you. Every step you take, even the ones that you thought you were taking away from God, are in the great providential story of the mystery of God's love, steps toward your Creator. Wherever you move, wherever you are within the field of that magnetic draw of the cross, God has not lost track of you. God will come for you. "And when I am lifted up, I will draw all people unto myself." Amen.